Hello, and welcome to the Wild Heart Meditation Center podcast. We release these episodes every week on Wednesday mornings, and the best way to support us is by clicking subscribe and taking a moment to rate the podcast wherever you are listening. If you'd like to support our efforts to keep the nonprofit Meditation Center open in Nashville, you can donate via Venmo by sending your donation to @WildHeartNashville, or you can make a donation through our website, wildheartmeditationcenter.org, by clicking the Donate tab. Peace and love. Hope you enjoy.
I'm just going to go ahead and get going into a topic for tonight. Like I said, it's shame and Buddhist practices for working with shame. If shame hasn't already arrived here, how do y'all feel? Is it okay if we welcome shame into the room? Why not? Huh? Sometimes just it shows up all on its own, uninvited, right? Yeah. Me and Kim were talking about Big Mouth earlier and how they have the shame wizard. I love that. How we can create characters sometimes of our minds so we don't take them so personally. And I think that's a very great value to mindfulness, that we don't take the mind so personal sometimes. And some of the ways we can not take the mind so personal sometimes is just by simply naming the mind. And when shame arises, we can go, oh, there you are, shame. There you are. And these shame wizards sometimes have some voices. And I know, for me, my shame wizard kind of repeats himself a lot. And a continual theme of you don't belong. You don't belong here. And in most places I go to, oh, you don't belong here. You don't fit in. You're the weird one. And everybody thinks you're weird in here. It's like, oh, okay, thank you, shame wizard. And there's like other ones that are like sneakier. Like, I'm doing it wrong. Like anytime something like breaks, oh, I did it wrong. One continual one that my wife and I laugh about is when I hit a red light, I'm always the one that hits the fucking red lights. Oh, like I take even like hitting a red light personal. And so as we welcome in our shame and our shame wizards and all their voices, are there any voices y'all hear? And please, you know, feel free to welcome to the group. Yeah.
You'll never be able to do that.
You'll never be able to do that. Yeah. Yeah.
You shouldn't eat like this.
You shouldn't eat like this. Yeah. Ooh, that's a good one.
You don't deserve
that. What was it?
You don't deserve that.
You don't deserve that. Okay. Yeah.
You're not good enough.
Yeah. Classic there. Classic. You're not. You're not good enough. Yeah. And yeah, thank you for welcoming it in. And then, you know, I like the laughter too, because I think empathy has a tone sometimes of laughter. When we let these shame wizards in to the group, they're less heavy, you know, they're more normalized. And I think as we go through, what my talk really shows us is the antidote to shame is welcoming and welcoming with a group of people. But let's start from the top. What does Buddhism teach about shame? And if we look into the traditional teachings, there's a word called hiri. Hiri and otipa. Hiri and otipa really mean moral shame and moral dread is hiri otipa. And hiri as this moral shame sounds pretty terrible, right? But it's actually a quite wholesome mind state to have, this moral shame, according to Buddhism, of hiri. Because what hiri is the dread and the worry about doing something harmful. So you know when you do something and it's outside of your own ethics and values and you kind of feel gross about it and you don't feel that good about it, that's that feeling of hiri. It's what keeps us in line with our ethics and also informs our ethics. And that's what I think is so great about Buddhist ethics is we're not taking this as a top-down approach, really. It's not about following the rules, and it's also not about following every impulse. It's about following your heart. And Peary really gives us that quality to see for yourself, to have your own ethics and guidelines through following the heart. So when you feel shitty about doing something, oh yeah, listen to that heart. And so this is more of a sense, I think, of guilt rather than shame. And so I don't know if really what we're talking about here in our modern context of shame is what Peary is. I think what we're talking about as shame is more of like a self-hatred. And there is a story in Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach. Anybody read that book? Great book. And there's a story in there. They talk about a group of Western teachers got together, and the Dalai Lama came to guide these Western teachers. And the teachers were talking with each other to figure out a good question to ask the Dalai Lama. And they said, what's the main thing? What's the main hindrance you run into with your students? And we'll bring it up to the Dalai Lama. And the teachers got together and they decided, yeah, self-hatred and shame are probably the biggest hindrance we deal with our students. And so they go and they ask the Dalai Lama this. And the Dalai Lama has an interpreter. And the interpreter really didn't have a word for self-hatred to tell the Dalai Lama, so there was this like commotion happening that they couldn't figure out how to present this question to him. And then at some point, the Dalai Lama finally got it. He goes, oh, yeah, that's terrible. Why would somebody hate themselves? Like, why would anybody hate themselves when they know they have Buddha nature? I think that's a wonderful observation. Like, oh, if we all really knew we had this awakened nature in us and this interconnection in us, would we really have so much shame? I don't know. But I think what the interesting thing about this story is that there was confusion. The Dalai Lama didn't say, oh yeah, all of my students hate themselves too. What we discovered is it was the Western teachers that had an issue with it. And so that there may be some discovery about shame if we look at what context we have shame in. That this may be a cultural thing for us. And I think it's helpful to have a sense of critical awareness when we look at what gives birth to shame, and especially for us Western people. I know for me, Big Brother, the finale of Celebrity Big Brother is tonight, so I'm missing it to be with my friends, so I got the DVR going. Yeah. But I love Big Brother, and for years, they're better about it now, but for years on Big Brother, they had these very attractive people, big muscles, and they shave their bodies, and I just see these people, and I'm like, I don't look like that. Like, and then I'd have a commercial, watch a commercial, and it would say, oh, if you buy this product, you can look like these pretty people on the show. And so there are multi-billion dollar industries dependent on their survival on our self-hatred. If we felt okay about ourselves, we wouldn't need these products. But they're fueling us to have self-hatred so our economy can keep going. And I think it's helpful to have a critical awareness of that so we don't feel like we don't shame ourselves for even having shame. Like, it's not our fault. That we have this economic system that values competition over cooperation. It values independence versus interdependence. And I think really that's where the birthplace of shame is. Shame is lonely. Shame is independent. Shame is comparing and competing. And so not only in our like economic system, but if you're anything like me, growing up in old school religion sometimes has been very shaming. That I'm Mikey, but I was named after Saint Michael, the archangel that banishes the devil from heaven. And really, if we're looking at Saint Michael or the devil being banished, I tend to identify with the devil. I feel like I'm the one banished. And there's this sense of like worthiness. You can't be a part of our beautiful paradise unless you become something. And if you're evil, bad, or wrong, you're unworthy and we're going to banish you. And that is the root of shame, feeling banished, feeling separate, and feeling like you don't belong. And as I say this, like, critical awareness, right? To have a sense of critical awareness so you don't feel like it's your fault, but at the same time, I don't want to take away the hope of maybe taking responsibility for our shame. And so also in this talk, that I want to give hope that there is something we can do with this shame. Rather than blaming, you know, oh, fuck capitalism, fuck religion, not blaming these things. Because I think blame takes away our own power. But notice that we may be affected by these things. And then we can move forward. So shame is an emotional state that arises when we feel insecurely connected to a group, family, or community. Yeah. And I also think it's like really, in my case, a lot of times it's a secondary emotion. When we talk about if it's an emotional state, but sometimes we know our core emotions, but then we have our secondary emotions that kind of mask the core emotion. Like, I know sometimes I'll get sad, but then I'll get mad, so now I have the mad sads, that the mad is like the secondary emotion to the sad. And so a lot of times I'll have like things like grief and sadness that just don't feel, or anxiety too, going into a room and feel anxious, and then I'll have the shame on top of it, right? You don't belong here, that's why you feel this anxiety. And so, you know, shame plays really into our core survival. I always like to reflect on that humans are pack animals. Look at us right now. We're in a room full of people, and we're getting together to communicate and to be in community because that is what humans do to survive. That the past, you know, few years with COVID and isolation have been really tough for a lot of us, especially, you know, myself, because that isolation is not natural. It is not what we're intended to do. And so what we are intended to do is get together and work together. And while we may have this illusion of independence, it is a complete illusion. We do nothing on our own. We built this building here. We built it with a group of people. We built that road with a group of people. If we ever have a sense of needing emotional regulation, we need to do it with another person. So anything and everything we do it with people. And this ties into our basic survival mode. So if we ever feel separate from the group, it can feel like death. And so shame really can feel like fucking death sometimes. That I feel separate, this is against my own survival strategies of what it is to be a human, very primal stuff. And that feeling of separateness really eats at us. And so while we can look at things like emotion regulation and how we get in groups of people to regulate our emotions, there's Dr. Shelley Yurum talks about covert and overt trauma, that we may have this traumatic event that happens, but really the way it's regulated may be a whole nother trauma. We may have shame trauma. So while we have overt trauma, we go through an event. And the one I use this one a lot, and I'll use it again because I think it's a really poignant trauma in my life, that the early 2000s, how I was playing in a glam rock, like punk, emo, goth band, and I wore makeup and looked really pretty, and I was really playing with my gender identity at the time, and you know, living in Northwest Florida, this was a very threatening thing, and so I was at my apartment, and I went to the store in front of my apartment to get cigarettes, and there was a group of good old boys there that had a problem with the way I was presenting myself and called me a bunch of derogatory terms. I told them to fuck off and went on my way, And when I went to go to my apartment, they cornered me in an alley and beat the shit out of me. And then while I was going through this and they're beating me, I looked up and somebody was walking by. And I thought, oh, they're going to help. But that person walking by started cheering them on as they were beating me. And over time, they stopped beating me and went on my way. And the afterwards, yes, this is a traumatic, difficult event. But afterwards, I went to my friends and I was a mess. I was having a difficult time. But they didn't have space for that difficulty. What they knew to do was like, we're going to go find them or hurt them. And I was like, okay. Like, or some people were saying like afterwards, well, why'd you tell them to fuck off? Why'd you do that? And then I felt that shame of like, oh, I shouldn't have spoke up for myself. Or why, you know, why didn't you fight back? I would have kicked their ass if I were you. And so like that more shame of like, you should have toughened up and attacked them before they attacked you. And more, it was like more of this advice giving of what I should have done. Like I didn't fucking think of it before, right? And even like the shame about looking a certain way, living in a certain place, like so much blame and shame about just being attacked. And this is what I'm talking about. There's the situation that happened that was painful, but really it was how it was regulated was truly painful. It was that almost that shame trauma. Because something tells me if I went through that event and people were like, we love you, let's talk about it, let's, you know, I'm here for you anytime you need me, let's cry together, let's get angry together, let's be with this together, I feel like these feelings would present themselves differently right now. And so how we do that really is the how, if we understand emotions, we understand they're contagious. If I started yelling right now, I bet y'all would feel a little excitement or start yelling. If I start crying right now, I bet some of you would start crying because the emotions are contagious. So if I come to somebody with such a heavy emotion of being jumped and they don't have the ability to be with that, they dismiss it, right? They get rid of it. Well, just let me go kill them. You know, let me go figure out a plan so next time it doesn't happen. And it gets kind of shaming, rather than leaning into the emotion and saying, yes, this emotion can be here. Yes, I understand you feel that way. We can feel this way together. And that's really what deconstructs shame, is when we say yes to the very thing, rather than trying to fix it or control it or change it. And you know, peace and love to the people that tried to love me in their own way. I understand, I can forgive. They were not available for such difficult emotions, right? And so as we go through maybe these difficult situations that we have shame and blame around, it's important to have mindfulness to see that sometimes we have masks. That these secrets that we keep, we hide them in all these different shameful ways. So it's not only shame. Shame manifests itself in so many different ways. One way I'm guilty of is like this contempt and almost this like egocentric thing that even like narcissism, we think, oh, narcissists are so, you know, prideful and full of themselves, but really the root of narcissism is shame. And we can look at how we can put on a mask of that comparison, and when we have the mask of comparison, I'm better than you. Years and years ago, I was doing a facilitator training. I was involved in it, not teaching it. And what we had to do is give different talks and meditations and listen and give feedback. And every time somebody gave a talk, you know, it's a very difficult place to be in when you're being, you know, graded by your peers, right? And every time you gave a talk, I was like thinking, oh, I could have done better than them. I would have gave a better talk than them. This is all the ways they did it wrong. And I just kept on like building myself up in a very protective way, and understanding underneath that was I was scared to give a talk. And so like that mask of that contempt of like, I'm better than you, has this underlying shame quality to it. And there's other things like envy. Sometimes we have jealousy and envy, where they're two different things. And that's why I think through mindfulness we can name them when we're going through them. Envy is somebody has something that I want. They don't deserve it, that should be mine. Where jealousy is, I have something and I feel like somebody's going to take it away from me. Envy normally has two people. Jealousy normally has three or more. So in these ways of like being masked by the very things of scarcity sometimes has this quality of shame to it. And I think a really big one with shame that needs to be named is idealization. Sometimes we think people are there's some perfect person out there that has no human qualities, that doesn't have emotions, they don't cry, they don't have any problems. And we idealize them as a perfect person, and we put them on a pedestal. It's like almost the opposite of the narcissism. They're perfect, I suck, right? And I think that can be quite dangerous and difficult. And really, falling into understanding that all people have difficulties as we project idealizations onto people. And the last mask that I want to talk about is really probably my biggest mask of my life is addiction. That addiction is truly from isolation. That's where they say the opposite of addiction isn't necessarily sobriety. The opposite of addiction is connection. And this is what happens when somebody like me that is an isolator, that doesn't feel safe in groups of people, that goes, I don't belong, I don't feel comfortable in the room, we hide. And when we hide, we have our secrets, and we have our feelings, and they're bottled up. And we need to go someplace for regulation. And so since humans naturally go to other humans for regulation, and that's what really soothes our emotions, we're just too scared to go to other people to regulate our emotions, so we're left on our own and with our own devices. And I know, that these emotions arise in me, and I'm too afraid to go to people to regulate these emotions. I know a drink will regulate that emotion very well. And so this is why we need to be in groups of people, because that's really what will actually soothe the very thing we're afraid to talk about. And going into a place of soothing these things, it's important that we go to people that are able to soothe these things. That's vulnerability. We find a place to take off the armor, take off the judgments, take off the fixing, managing, and controlling, and allow our hearts to live exactly the way they're calling to be seen. And when we do that, we need to find people we can trust. And like I said before, it's like some people just don't have that capacity. Not everybody's worthy of our vulnerability, and that's okay. But when we find groups of people that are worthy of our vulnerability, that's really where the shame starts to subside. When we say the very thing we're afraid to say, you're only as healthy as your secrets, right? We have all these secrets, they're in our guts, they're lifting weights. But as we let these secrets out, they soften up a little bit. And when we say something to somebody, we tell our secrets, we tell our shames, we share our emotions with somebody, if they're able to hold them in a regulating way, it's beautiful. So it's not a way, if I was like to share the story about getting my ass kicked, somebody's like, oh shit, that's terrible, that's awful. well, that's not the way to regulate it. But at the same time, it's not a way to dismiss it. Like, ah, get over it. You know, shit happens. It's more of this, yeah, that's tough. Like, I feel that. That's a tough place to be. And that really soothes the shame a lot. And so going through these masks we wear and how shame manifests itself and how we got to this place of this westernized shame and self-hatred, we can adapt old-school Buddhism to some of these approaches. And one I named earlier that I think is key for me is mindfulness. Mindfulness of the mind. That if our shame wizards tell us some hateful things, some self-hatred, if we can really just come to a place of observing that thought and knowing that thought is a thought, without fighting it, no, I'm a good person, or believing it, yes, I am a terrible person, just having that, yeah, that's a thought, it really brings it to a beautiful place that we can live with that thought without fighting it or believing it. And Brené Brown, you know, I got this far in the shame talk without mentioning Brené Brown. I'm so proud of myself. So Brené Brown, as she says, that there's guilt in their shame, right? That guilt is I made a mistake, and shame is I am a mistake. And that I am is so key, that we have a thought, and then we think, I am that thought. I am that self-hatred. I am the shame, rather than self-hatred arises in the mind. It's okay. I was teaching at a treatment center months ago, and there sometimes I do a sharing circle in the room, and there's this beautiful young lady that was there, and she was sharing about how much she hated herself. And the room was shocked. They're like, whoa, you hate yourself? And it's like, you're beautiful, you're kind, you're funny, and you hate yourself? And so the room kept on telling her she's wrong. You know, you are incorrect for hating yourself. You're beautiful, you're funny, you're great. And it is kind of confusing sometimes seeing these wonderful people hate themselves. And at the same time, afterwards, I went up to her and was like, I get you. I hate myself sometimes too. That's totally okay. And it was like, oh, thanks. Right? Well, you know, while it's irrational, sometimes it's okay if you hate yourself. Totally okay. That's what the mind does sometimes. And it doesn't become this big, shameful wizard. It just becomes like this, you know, magician that performs at children's parties. It's like, oh yeah, it's less big. And so non-identifying with the mind is so beautiful. And then while we have the mind, we can also incline it in certain ways. And we can incline the mind towards appreciation, that as envy and jealousy and comparing happens, we see somebody that has what we want, has the life we want, and then we like hate on ourselves because we're not them. We have the practice of mudita. Mudita is this sympathetic joy, finding joys in others' joys. So if we compare ourselves, and then we have that comparison is the thief of happiness, we can also appreciate other people's joys. Like I said, emotions are contagious. So not just the emotions of sadness, not just the emotions of grief, but also the emotions of celebration and joy can be contagious. So opening our hearts up to that. So when somebody has something beautiful and we're like, oh, where's mine? We can shift the mind to be like, I'm really happy you have the life I like. Enjoy your life. I want you to have all the happiness in the world. Because if we're only able to find happiness in our own life, we lessen our opportunity for happiness from 7 billion to 1. So finding happiness in others' happiness really can break down the shame in a actually pleasant way, too. And probably the biggest response to shame is one of the three gems that we take refuge in. Refuge is a way to find safety, that this world is quite insecure and difficult by nature. But we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And the Sangha, this last gem, is taking refuge in community. And there's a traditional story that Ananda, the Buddha's assistant, had an insight. He went to the Buddha and said, "I got it. I got it, Buddha. I figured it out. Sangha, community, is half of the holy life. I got it. Half of the holy life is all about this community." And the Buddha said, "Not so, Ananda. You got it wrong. The Sangha is 100% of the holy life. Your spiritual path is 100%, all of it. The whole of the practice is community." And anytime you hear somebody giving a talk on Sangha and community, you're going to hear that story, and I think we take it lightly sometimes. That the main part of this spiritual practice is the room of people we're in, your friendships, and the people that support you on this path. That's the number one thing. We get it backwards here. We call ourselves a meditation center. We need to change the sign. That's the meditation. The Buddha didn't say meditation is the most important thing of the spiritual life. He said community is. So we need to go change the sign. Say Wild Heart Sangha Center, right? Because that's what really leads us on this path. So, you know, while we wanted to have a daily meditation practice, can we have a daily Sangha practice? That would be huge for me. You know, if I wake up and sit for an hour every day, do I call a friend for an hour every day? That'd be really good. And so while I give you meditation instructions every time we're here, friendship instructions probably is what I should be giving you. Do you have each other's phone numbers? Do you call each other? Say, how you doing? Well, when you're celebrating, do you celebrate together? When you're crying, do you cry together? Because that is 100% of the holy life. I got into Buddhism because I liked sitting in meditation with my eyes closed, not paying attention to anybody else. I thought, sweet, I can ignore everybody. They scare me anyway, right? So sitting in meditation, okay. But then actually learn about what we're doing here in meditation. It's open your eyes and talk to the people next to you. It's like, ooh, that's tough. Sitting in isolation, I got that down. But talking to people, damn. But that's really where a lot of the juice and the benefit comes from, deconstructing the shame. When you're able to welcome in the very thing you're afraid of, it subsides. When you have a friend that normalizes what you're feeling, because shame is that, not like you, I'm different. The feelings I'm feeling are so unique that nobody could ever have these feelings. And when somebody says, yeah, I feel that feeling too. Because we may have different situations. We all have different lives. But emotions, when there's only like 8 core emotions or something like that, we've all experienced all the emotions we're going to experience. So we can have empathy with emotions. So, you know, while I share a story about getting beaten up, you may have not been beaten up, but when I share a story about embarrassment and grief and feeling unsafe, I'm sure you've had those feelings too. So when you say, yeah, I felt, I know that feeling, that's really what deconstructs shame. So I do want to leave some time for sharing if we're talking all about community. And I want to open it up. And as I open it up, if you'd like to share, please raise your hand and I'll call on you. I'll moderate the discussion. And when you speak, please let's lift up this quality of friendship. Give your name and let's try to remember each other's name. I'm terrible at that. And speak from your own perspective. No advice giving, because like I said, sometimes that's really dismissive, right? And respecting I statements. And if you want to share, any of your own shames, like, ooh, this is something I've noticed that comes up around shame, or anything really in general around this topic of shame, I welcome it. So, I'll open up to y'all. Thanks. Mm-hmm.